listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome to Aquarium Mania on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Anong, speaking to you from the University of Florida's Tropical Aquaculture Laboratory. Thanks for joining us. Where can aquarium fish hobbyists go for general information and help? Hobbyist organizations are an excellent source of knowledge in all aspects of the hobby and can provide great tips on fish, systems, supplies, and even local stores. There are local aquarium societies in many cities in the United States that cater to both freshwater and marine enthusiasts. There are also national hobbyist organizations that are even more specialized. These groups can help you get to the next level, as my guest Bill Shields will tell you. Bill Shields started keeping fish at the ripe old age of 6. Sometime after college, Bill finally started working officially in the aquarium industry, becoming general manager of 3 Dr. Pet Centers in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area. He joined the Susquehanna Aquarium Society in 1974 and was formally introduced to the organized portion of the hobby. He became very active in all facets of the society and later joined other hobbyist organizations. During a hiatus from the aquarium world, while Bill worked with elephants, he actually formed, with a group of 8, the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society in 1992. In 1995, Bill was hired as a breeder for 5D Tropical Incorporated, an aquarium fish production and import-export facility in Plant City, Florida. Join us as we discuss aquarium fish hobbyist do's and don'ts and learn how to avoid common hobbyist mistakes. We'll be right back after these messages with Bill Shields.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in 4 unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
This valuable information comes from your pet. There's nothing like a wagging tail or friendly paw to lift your mood. They're therapeutic and make us feel good. Studies show pets even reduce stress, prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and fight depression. So there you have it. Pets are a daily dose of good health and happiness. Pets add life. To learn more, visit petsaddlife.org.
Hi, this is Marcy Davis and my service dog Whistle, and we're your hosts of Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Working Like Dogs is the show where you can learn everything you ever wanted to know about working animals or working dogs. Whether you're a member of a working dog team, or you've just seen a working dog or animal out at the mall or the grocery store, and you're curious about how these amazing animals work with their human partners, then Working Like Dogs is the show for you. Join us for the inside scoop at Working Like Dogs on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Aquarium Mania on PetLifeRadio.com with Dr. Roy Anong, and I'm speaking with Bill Shields, who is the head breeder at 5D Tropical Incorporated in Plant City, Florida. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Roy. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for taking some time out to talk with us today.
Oh, no problem.
Well,
nice rainy day in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. A kind of a rainy, cool day in Florida. Well, you have been involved in all aspects of the hobby ever since, I guess, you were 6 years old. And so you've got a really good kind of feel for many of the things that hobbyists are going through when they first get into it. And because of all the work you've done, both professionally as well as throughout your life, you've got a good handle as well on many of the advanced levels of the hobby as well. And so getting back to kind of the early days, what was your very first fish?
My first fish was guppies in a drum bowl with some snails. And they both equally fascinated me because they both produced quantities of young. And I guess that was the trigger to set the wheels in motion for wanting to breed fish.
And now you said you lived in South Florida, I guess. Is that correct?
Yeah.
When you were growing up?
I was transport. Of course, I'm a transplant, as many of the people in Florida are, from Buffalo, New York at about age 7. And I grew up in the Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach area.
Okay. And then you went up to Pennsylvania for school or job?
Well, actually, my father took a job in the, he was in the hotel restaurant industry, and he got a very lucrative job offer up there, so they extracted me out of a place I did not want to leave to the cold country. And so, yes, and I finished my high school education and college education in Pennsylvania, and then at graduation of college, I promptly moved back to Florida.
Now, I know you ended up working for, as I think you mentioned, Dr. Pet Centers in Pennsylvania. So you came down to Florida and then you went back up. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, at the time, the lady I was married to got homesick and we had to relocate.
Okay. Now, over the years, how many aquariums and tanks would you say that you've probably had, or maybe at your high point, how many tanks have you had? Maybe this is your high point now.
At my high point, when I was involved in the retail end of the business and I was in the stores probably 12 hours a day, I had 65 tanks going.
At home?
At home. This was my relaxation after putting in a day of dealing with the retail pet trade.
And so I know kind of interesting that you ended up doing elephants in between. How did you get from working in retail, the retail aquarium portion of the industry, to working with elephants?
Well, as life progresses and relationships go, we moved back to Florida, and the job market was, as it is now, very poor. And I went out to a facility which is now closed, Circus World, on I-4 and Highway 27, to apply for a vet tech position. Unfortunately, I didn't get that position, but they said, oh, we have a new head elephant guy. He might need help. So I went down and talked to him.
And you got the job.
And I got as he told me later, he says, I thought you're a little strange because you're the only one ever to come in a coat and tie to apply for this position. And as it was, I got into it just as they're getting into a breeding program. And with my biology background, I happen to know a little more than some of the people around, so I rose to being a midwife for 37 baby elephants.
That's quite a change from fish. So,
I still had fish tanks at the house. No, not as many as I had in the height of the obsession, but I always maintained fish.
And while you were working with the elephants, you started a group in Tampa. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, we'll go back a little in time, if you will. When I was in Pennsylvania in the stores, my customers approached me and said, hey, we have an aquarium society, which was a new concept to me, and they said, why don't you come to a meeting? Well, I did, and I liked it, and it was the Susquehanna Aquarium Society, and I became very active in that, and after a while, because of my involvement, I got, of course, elected to vice president and then president, and served on the board of directors while I was in Pennsylvania. And that's how I got acquainted with the society group part of the hobby. And then when we moved to Florida and I got over to Tampa, I was working, our herd of elephants moved to Busch Gardens, and we got established, and I started looking around. I said, there's no hobby group. So what the heck is this? This is just totally alien from the way the hobby is conducted in the north. I said, there's got to be a group. So there used to be a group, but it expired. It had problems, I guess. And and dissipated. And as a hobbyist, you become one of the things you do is you visit fish stores. This is part of the ritual of fish hobbyists. As you get more into the hobby aspect of it, you have to go to all the stores to see what they have, what's new, what's available. And when you're doing this, you bump into people, and people of like mind you keep bumping into. And after a while, we says, hey, we need to get together and do this as a group. And with the help of Fish World, Rick Gibson at the time, who offered us his store after hours to meet, there was, I believe, nine of us started meeting there and formulated the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society. And since then, it's grown, and I believe we're at 100-plus membership now. And we've been going for almost 20 years.
Wow. So now, before we talk a little bit more about the Aquarium Society, I guess maybe just to kind of round everything up in terms of yourself, you are working now at 5D Tropical, and you're, I know, obviously one of the esteemed breeders there. So what are your kind of duties there now versus in retail?
Well, and now I just, my vocation has turned into my avocation. I'm getting paid to do what I used to pay to do, which is kind of a dream job. And my duties here, I breed the barbs, tetras, grommies, danios. And now we're into the, we're in conjunction with Yorktown Technologies. We do the transgenic danios, the glowfish, which are quite popular and doing quite well. And they've located their research and development facility here, so I work in conjunction with them as we move on into the future with this.
That's great. So definitely a dream come true job for you, it sounds like.
Dream come true.
So
get paid to do what you used to pay to do. How can that be bad?
Exactly. So now, I guess going back to the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society, I actually was lucky enough to meet up with you folks when I first moved down, and I think the very first year joined with you, and definitely a lot learned through that society. Can you, I guess, maybe tell us a little bit about what some of these societies, including the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society, can do for members?
Well, it puts you in contact with like-minded people at all levels of the expertise and involvement in the hobby. So you have a ready network of information there. In Tampa Bay Aquarium Society, we meet once a month, second Monday of the month at the Florida Aquarium from 7 till 10 p.m., and that's a Monday night, second Monday. And the information in this hobby, I found you're always learning something. I've been doing this for 50-plus years, and I'm constantly learning something new, a better way to do something, a whole new way to do something, and it's just very fascinating and very rewarding. The people we have in the club are from brand-new people who some of them don't even have a tank when they come. They're just thinking about it, trying to get their foot wet, their toe wet, see if they like it or not. To people that do it, they sell fish on the internet. Some of them are farmers, small farmers that come. It's a very diverse group of people with just a very wide knowledge base. And they're all very freely sharing this with whoever.
Yeah, definitely a great mix of folks and a lot of really fun and interesting personalities in that group. So now going back to the folks that maybe don't even have a tank, what would you say are maybe some of the most common mistakes or misconceptions that some of the new hobbyists have? What would be some of the things that you think folks should know about?
The pitfalls.
The pitfalls.
Well, yeah, the overs and unders.
Okay.
The biggest mistake people make, in my opinion, is overfeeding.
Okay.
The fish are, they become conditioned. When you walk near the tank, they come up and they beg. I mean, depending on the fish, you get in your cichlids, and they'll come and, I mean, they eyeball you. They have personal contact with you, and they're begging for food, so you feel compelled to feed them. Well, they can't eat everything's put in, so it fouls the water, and you have bad water quality, and bad water quality leads to bad things.
So what do you tell those folks, you know, especially the new folks that are, you know, trying to figure out how much to feed, or maybe if they have this sort of draw.
With the hobby in general, is observation. It's an observational hobby. You sit there and you watch. You put food in. If there's food left after 5 minutes and it's settling on the bottom of the tank, you've overfed. You can, and I think they get confused with a number of times feeding and the amount fed. You can feed fish as many times as you want, all amounts. And we're feeding down to the water, and you have bad water quality, and bad water quality leads to diseases and all kinds of things. And the second thing I think that is, it might even be tied with overfeeding, is overstocking. A new hobbyist gets in and they're fascinated by everything. They want everything they see, and they keep buying that one more fish. And pretty soon they exceed the capacity of the tank. And then you compound problems again.
So in terms of overstocking or getting too many fish, what's kind of is there a kind of good rule of thumb, or what sort of suggestions would you make for these folks?
Over the years I've heard all kinds of things, but the sometimes people will buy fish that are small when they buy them, but they grow to big sizes, and overstocking can be compensated by doing water changes. If you do water changes on a regular basis, you can stock your tanks a little heavier than normal. I'd say, I don't even know anymore, maybe 10 small fish in a 10-gallon tank is more than enough, depending on filtration and the amount of water changes you do.
Now, do you tell folks, or do you guys talk with them about water quality? And
the part of the benefit of blog to the society or any group that that meet and discusses things, we're a big organization, so we have speakers come in. We have in-house speakers. We have people in the water quality. We've been lucky enough. Joe Gargis moved back into the area, and his expertise is in water quality. And he's talked to us several times about the water of our local waters and make corrections for the inadequacies of them, the chemicals in them. And it's enlightening. Lion speakers. There's expert speakers around the country that are experts in whatever field, whether it be tetras like Randy Carey or perhaps like Jeff Cardwell, or we've had Dr. Paul Lysell come down. We have locally Don Conkle, a Central American cichlid expert and farmer. So there's a whole range of information available to the people that come. And then we also have what we call study groups, where we just meet in usually two groups and have two different topics, maybe breeding fish, maintaining fish, filters, live foods. So there's just a variety of information that can be plucked from meeting with the group.
Okay. So I guess going back to some of these really common mistakes, what would be another one that you see a lot?
We've been over-lighting. People put a light on the fish tank and either forget to turn it off, or the simple solution would be put it on a timer. If you're growing algae in the tank, you've got the light on too much. You need to reduce the amount of light. And that fouls the visibility of the tank and can also lead to the tank fouling. Another one's over-treating. Once we run into problems from doing some of the aforementioned things, people think they have to treat something. So they start putting chemicals into the water. A lot of times you can correct a condition just by doing a simple water change. And that will clear up a lot of the problems that you're having. The most successful thing we can treat for in a tank when you have parasites, if you have external parasites, they're fairly simple to treat for. But when they're treating for bacterial or viral things, it's kind of guesswork, and they're just going to their store and buying some antibiotic or chemical and putting it in the water and hoping. So a lot of times it's better to separate the fish out and treat them separately.
Okay.
Which would lead to another point I'd like to make. That's a very common mistake. They don't have a quarantine tank. You should always have a quarantine tank for your new fish. If you bring a new fish in from a store, quarantine him for a week. See if he's going to develop a problem. so you don't introduce anything into your main tank. And a quarantine tank is just basically a filtered, empty tank that you can observe the fish and keep it and treat it if need be without affecting your main display tank or tank.
Okay. You know, I want to talk to you a little bit more about some of these real common mistakes that hobbyists make, but we'll have to take a short break and listen to some messages from our sponsors.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seat bags and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet, pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslowski, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Aquarium Mania on Pet Life Radio. We're continuing our conversation with my guest Bill Shields of 5D Tropical Incorporated, talking about some of the common mistakes that hobbyists make. So, Bill, we talked a little bit about overfeeding, overstocking, overlighting. What are some of the other overs and other mistakes that you see real commonly with new hobbyists?
Well, one that's seen, I was in this before the invention of the internet. Another one, I'm just listening to the people that come to the club, the newbies, is overbelieving in the information they obtain on the internet. It's very easy to post or put anything on the internet. You really need to verify the stuff with alive next to your person that's been in the hobby or is experienced before you just take at face value what they post.
Can you give us an example? I'm kind of curious.
The most recent one in mind is somebody sent me a link to a somebody that did a YouTube video on decapsulation of brine shrimp. It was kind of scary because you're working with a strong bleach solution, and there's several precautions that weren't mentioned or done, and they kind of glossed it over and made it look like it was a 5-minute operation, and it really isn't.
And I guess for maybe the folks that aren't familiar with that, can you explain to everybody what decapsulation of brine shrimp is and what
decapsulation of brine shrimp? Sorry, Roy. This the brine shrimps are saltwater equivalent, I guess, of a freshwater Daphne. When conditions are good, they have live babies and produce mass amounts of offspring. And then as conditions of the water, temperature, lighting, water parameters, food availability change, they start laying cysts or eggs. And these can overwinter and survive dehydration. And because of this fact, they're collected and put in vacuum-packed cans, and we can hatch them on demand to feed our baby fish. One of the drawbacks of hatching the raw cyst in is they have a shell. The shell of the shrimp comes off into water, and you have all this debris, and some baby fish, like Corydoras catfish babies, for example, are real bright, and they'll ingest these hard shells and become impacted and die. So to avoid these problems and to make it a better product, you decapsulate, and brine shrimp cysts are so hardy, which is kind of hard to imagine. You can put a bleach solution, and professionally we use the sodium hydroxide to increase the pH of the solution. Very harsh chemicals on these things, and it dissolves the cyst, and then you have a egg that is debris-free, and it hatches in a shorter period, and even if it doesn't hatch, it's available as good food for your fry.
And okay.
And that's kind of the industry standard for commercial operations.
On the internet site or link, basically, they were not being real careful, and because you are using bleach.
Well, the one, the University of Ghent is the leader in artemia research, and their recommendations for decapsulation is you hydrate the cyst in fresh water for an hour and a half to 2 hours with vigorous agitation. So you put air stream in there and hydrate them because the cysts look like a sunken-in ping pong ball when you start with them, and you want them to be plump and look like a good ping pong ball when you do the decapsulation so you have maximum surface contact with the chemicals. The guy in the video, I believe, says 5 minutes is plenty. Well, I'm sure you do get some, but you don't get the most efficient. I have to go with the people that are experts in the field, and it was kind of just passed over as this is the way you do it.
Well, that's definitely, as you know, a real good point, and I think a lot of folks are maybe not quite as cautious as they should be with internet information. And obviously a lot of real good information on the internet, but as you mentioned, some things that maybe if you're not familiar with, you may not understand or realize some of the nuances with some of the information. So what other common problems do you see regularly?
We've done some overs. Let's do some unders.
All right.
One of the biggest unders is undersizing. As people want to get into the aquarium hobby, they really should get the largest tank they can afford. I'm not talking about the with all the bells and whistles, just the basic setup with the top, a light, and a filter. And if you get a bigger tank, you avoid a lot of the pitfalls of the overstocking. It can take some abuse from overfeeding. And then the tank's available for your fish to grow in. So if you start off with a 10-gallon tank, or now I kind of shudder when I see these little smaller nano tanks. The nano tanks might look good for a desk, but it's really for a more advanced person that can monitor the condition of the fish and the water parameters. A bigger tank is more forgiving. I don't know if I mentioned when you asked about how many tanks I maintained. Right now, because I'm in the business, my number of tanks at the house is probably down to about 15. But I've also converted my swimming pool over to a koi native fish pond.
with
20,000 gallons of water, it's very forgiving. So you can not do as frequent water changes, and I can overfeed because the koi beg, and I'm a sucker, so I feed them. But.
So undersizing, what are other unders?
Under-filtering. Buying the most inexpensive filter. You don't want to buy the biggest one that's going to blast the fish out of the water, but you want to buy one that might be a little overrated for the tank capacity, so you get maximum filtration. You get maximum turns of the water through the filter in an hour, which is how they rate them, gallons per hour. Because you want to have good filtration, mechanical and biological filtration also keeps the tank in pristine condition and your fish in good health.
That's right. And obviously with the water, definitely having a good water quality test kit and doing all that stuff is important as well. What other unders? You mentioned undersizing.
Another under dealing with your water quality is underdoing water changes. Some people feel if they top off the water from evaporation, that's doing a water change. You're not. You're just concentrating the bad stuff that's in the water. What you need to do is physically remove, ideally, I guess 20% every 2 weeks would be about minimum, and replace it with good fresh water that's been conditioned.
So when you
ideally, some of these people, the people that are raising fry and discus people, they'll do a 95% water change once a day to keep the water at maximum quality.
Now, speaking about water, I think I recall maybe one of the folks as well in the society that had kind of taken the clean water idea to the extreme and was using distilled water. I don't know if you remember that scenario that happened a while back. And you know, obviously, as you know, using distilled water in a tank is probably not a good idea for the fish. So,
no, what other... some of the fish need special water requirements, but pure distilled water probably isn't the best idea. You need to, the best is would be a mix of distilled or RO water with your regular city water. Here in Tampa, we're most of the fish that are available can take the city water with the chloramines removed with no problem, just to maintain them and enjoy them as a community tank fish. Now, if you get into the breeding aspect of it, you might have to alter the water parameters by adding your distilled or RO water.
And that's a good point you mentioned here in Tampa. And I, of course, depending on where the water is coming from, it's a good idea for folks to maybe familiar with what type of water the fish they want to keep need, and then actually know what type of water that they have, you know, either coming out of their well or their tap, if they're using city water, et cetera. So that's a good point. Any other unders?
Well, I do have another under, but I'll kind of segue into a plug for the club. If you go to TBAS1.com, you'll find the website of the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society, which I think is one of the best in the country. And located on this site is in the links is the TBAS forum. And if you go to the forum, you'll find a wealth of information on water quality, because our water quality expert, Joe Gargis, has analyzed and done the research on the local water, St. Pete, Clearwater, Tampa, and not only has broken down what is in the water, but has given directions on how to change the water to meet specific needs of, say, African cichlids, which need a harder, more alkaline water, or your softwater South American tetras. So there's another wealth of information that's available from being involved with a hobby organization.
Okay, and yeah, we'll definitely include those links on the website for the show. So that's a great plug there that will be very helpful. So yeah, go ahead. You were going to talk
about one of the biggies when I was coming up through, we didn't have the availability of the internet. So because I was a kid, I didn't have any money. The money I did spend on fish was very precious to me, so I wanted to make sure I got the most bang for my buck. So I did a lot of reading. I read the magazines, I read the available literature, and I researched my pending purchases to make sure that what I was going to purchase would be suitable for where I was going to keep it and how I could keep it. And I think that's a lot of times comes under the impulse buying. You see it, buy it, and now you have it, and you don't really know what to do with it.
So that would be like under knowledge, under research.
You're under research in your purchase.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and it's definitely probably a good kind of rule of thumb for any type of pet that anyone keeps, knowing as much as you can about that, the requirements, and you know, when they get to full size and all the different aspects of maintaining and keeping them healthy is, you know, very important. And you're right, definitely for all the different species of fish as well, being familiar with them. So how do you kind of help or give advice to folks that maybe have been doing some things right, but they're still having some issues and maybe are getting a little discouraged? What kind of general tips or guidelines do you give to these folks?
The best tip would be get involved with your local aquarium society, because in that society you will find somebody that is sharing your interest in whatever fish, whether it be cichlids or live bearers or killifish or native fish. Somebody in there will also have those and maybe has more experience and can help you along the way.
For folks that aren't in Tampa or the Tampa area, how do you locate an aquarium society in your region or in your city?
Well, recently, at the beginning of the meeting, we have a meet and greet for new people that come in, and they introduce themselves and let everybody know what their interest is, so the people during the breaks can get together with them and maybe help them out or see what's if they have any problems or any advice for them. It's a reciprocal thing. But we ask, how did you find out about us? And they Google us. They Google aquarium societies. They go to the internet and run a search. And also, a lot of the aquarium societies around the country advertise in the back of the trade magazines.
Now, does FAST, the Federation of, isn't there a national organization? Do they keep pretty accurate records of all the aquarium societies, or is that maybe not quite as complete?
That's a very good question, which I don't have an answer for, because I really don't know what's happened to FAST since. I was very active in I was founder of the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society, and I stayed on the board of director. I was vice president, president for about 10 years, and then I stepped back. It's often growing, so I stepped back from being actively involved on the board of directors. So as far as the Federation of Aquarium Society, we used to belong. I don't know if the
I was just curious because I think I'd remembered that a while back, but I guess it is going to depend on whether the society is actually a member or not. So probably Googling for your city and aquarium society is a really good way to go. So now we've talked a little bit about some of the common mistakes and maybe some suggestions for trying to make some corrections to some of those mistakes. I wanted to kind of close up by maybe having you talk a little bit about the fish shows that have been sponsored by the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society and the Aquarium Beautiful Show. Now, what are kind of some of the ins and outs of those shows? What are they for? What are kind of the cool things about those shows? I think people may not be familiar with the idea of a fish show.
Well, fish show, the Tampa Bay Aquarium Society is on hiatus now from bench shows, but you have we have done them in the past, and you set up bear tanks. It's a competition with, depending on the categories of fish, it is set up by the show itself. Some are species shows. You have nationally, you have the American Cichlid Association has just cichlids being shown, and there'll be 500-600 tanks of cichlids being showed individually, competing against themselves. So it's like a dog show, only for fish. The American Killifish Association has an annual fish show where there'll be 400 or 500 they're shown in pairs of killifish. The IBC, the International Betta Congress, has shows. The International Guppy Association has shows. Those are species-specific shows. General aquarium societies usually have categories of all the fishes, depending on the anticipated entries, how big the classes will be. We've held them at the Florida State Fairgrounds, which is conveniently located to us. And right now the Aquarium Society is on hiatus for showing, but we do an annual auction where fish are auctioned off. The fair, the state fair, does a in their family living, which building, which includes the baked goods, the knitting, the photography, the paintings, that type of craft stuff, has a area set aside for the competition of display tanks, aquarium beautiful tanks. There's five classes of. Tanks entered: saltwater, freshwater with plants, freshwater without plants, novelty, which is anything, and it's pretty interesting, and biotope, which is all plants, fish, and materials from a specific geographic region. And there's actual cash prizes. It's the best premiums besides livestock at the fair, and it's open to anybody in the state of Florida. There's a division for adults, a division for people that drive a living from the tropical fish industry, and there's a youth category from 7 to 17. And it's very well received by the attending public. They really are fascinated that people can bring these tanks, and they're set up, and it runs this year. Aquarium Beautiful runs February 4th to the 16th. So those tanks are set up for 2 weeks at the fairgrounds, and the people are just fascinated by them.
So that's, I guess, if they're interested in that, they can maybe look to the TBAS website if there's anyone in Florida. I know that some of the prizes are pretty decent money-wise, so that sounds like a great opportunity.
We're talking for a first place, best of show tank. I believe one tank can earn you $250. So it's kind of worth your time and effort to take it there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we are definitely, unfortunately, out of time. I want to thank our guest, Bill, you, and our producers, especially Mark Winter, for making the show possible. Bill, any final words for our listeners?
Get involved. Get involved at the group level, whether it be your local group, or if you're out somewhere where there's not a local group, the national group. There's with the availability of the internet now, you can become involved, and they all have forums, and there's information exchanged, and there's always something to learn. You never know it all.
Great advice. Thanks again, Bill, and we will definitely have a number of the websites that you mentioned available on the website for this show. I encourage all of you listening to visit my Aquarium Mania blog on Pet Life Radio. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a show, email me at drroy, D-R-R-O-Y, at petliferadio.com. If you're ever in Florida, please be sure to visit the Aquarium Mania exhibit at the Florida Aquarium in Tampa. So until next time, please visit your local aquarium stores, buy more fish, and keep your tanks and fish healthy and happy.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.